Who are the dead men of Dunharrow? Why did they help Aragorn? And where did they go afterwards? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover the Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. Just before the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, Aragorn recruited an army of the dead to fight for him. But how? Why were they waiting there under the mountain, and why did they decide to follow Aragorn? To understand what is going on here, we need to go way back, thousands of years into the Second Age of Middle-earth. Humanity's greatest civilization, Numenor, with its island kingdom, held sway over the seas and some coastal regions of the mainland. But increasingly, they were just focusing on themselves. The elves held some lands on the mainland of Middle-earth, but much of the rest, particularly in the south and east, were well and truly under the influence of Sauron. This time became known as the Dark Years. The elves remember that time as the Days of Flight, when they fled from Sauron's dark rule, and many men also fled his dark rule. We probably shouldn't judge these people too harshly. To many, Sauron seemed unstoppable at this point. Some, who only heard of him in whispers and legends but could see his influence everywhere, started seeing him as some kind of dark god, controlling their fate from afar. Sauron was apparently immortal and apparently the undisputed lord of much of Middle-earth. People lived and died by his word. He was a dark lord indeed. These people included the Men of the White Mountains, a people descended from the House of Haleth and the Dunlendings. The White Mountains are those mountains that stretch east-west across Middle-earth, ending at Minas Tirith. The Men of the White Mountains were, in Tolkien's words, primitive. Some fled, some stayed where they were and accepted the political reality by bending the knee to Sauron. Eventually, of course, Sauron did fall. The mighty Numenoreans pushed him back to Mordor and he surrendered, accepting his exile to Numenor. Not too long after that, Numenor also fell, swallowed up by the sea. Sauron was very much at the heart of that, and it led to a slightly in-between century or so of history in Middle-earth. Numenor had fallen, though some did escape. The Faithful, Elendil, Isildur and more. They established post-Numenorean kingdoms in Middle-earth, Gondor and Arnor. Not as powerful as the Numenorean kingdom, but still the height of the strength of man. Gondor claimed vast swathes of land across the south and east of the map of Middle-earth that we know. This included the White Mountains and the Men of the Mountains. Facing a new political reality, the Men of the Mountains understandably swore fealty to their new Gondorian overlords. To seal this, the King of the Mountains met Isildur, the joint king of the Numenorean successor kingdom of Gondor, at a place called Erech, a hill far west of Minas Tirith. There was a stone there, the Stone of Erech, that Isildur had brought with him from Numenor to represent his authority. The King of the Mountains swore fealty to Isildur. As an aside here, there's a lot that could be said about the Stone of Erech. First of all, it's pretty massive, as high as a man but half buried, so 12 feet or so in diameter. That's over 3.5 meters of solid stone, a smooth black stone sphere. Black stone is quite a fantasy trope, at least partly because of Tolkien. Just witness what George R. R. Martin does with the idea. There are magical implications here. And the idea that Isildur personally oversaw the transport of this ridiculously heavy artifact, firstly to Middle-earth on a ship, then overland to the top of a hill, adds to its mystique. We know that Elendil ordered the transport of various items of beauty and power, or of virtue and wonder, from Numenor, so presumably this is one of them. In any event, Sauron then returned. The last alliance of elves and men was formed, and Isildur called those who had sworn fealty to him to join the cause. They all did, except one. The Men of the Mountains refused to honour their promise. They had once worshipped Sauron and would not fight against him, even if it meant breaking a solemn vow of fealty. Isildur cursed the Men of the Mountains for breaking their vows. He said to their ruler, "Thou shalt be the last king, and if the West prove mightier than thy black master, this curse I lay upon thee and thy folk, to rest never until your oath is fulfilled. For this war will last through years uncounted, and you shall be summoned once again ere the end." In other words, that king and those soldiers who refused to honour their oath to come to the aid of the rightful king of Gondor would find no rest until they do just that, answer the call of the rightful heir of Isildur to fight against Sauron. Of course, Sauron was defeated in that battle at the end of the Second Age. The ring was cut from his finger, and the forces of darkness were pushed back once more. And whatever else happened in Middle-earth, Isildur's curse became operational. The wraiths, spirits of those men of the mountains who swore the oath, stayed in their home of the White Mountains, specifically the caves under the Dwemerberg, one of the mountains. It became known as a place of ghosts and doom. Over the centuries to follow, this whole area became seen as cursed. A sighting of the wraiths in the Valley of Harrowdale was a harbinger of troubled times, and the narrow mountain pass that led past their home became known as the Paths of the Dead. No one ever went there. We should probably note in passing that the strength of this curse, binding the souls of these men there for over 3 millennia, is probably not so much a reflection of any magical powers that Isildur may have had, but of the importance of oaths and oath-breaking in Tolkien's world, and the importance of the Erech Stone. There's enough here for another video, but suffice it to say here that breaking a solemn oath like this, made on a sacred stone, is clearly enough for this curse to become effective. And so the dead men of Dunharrow stayed there, cursed for almost the entire Third Age of Middle-earth. They had retreated to those caverns for fear of Isildur's wrath, and now they had to wait for Isildur's heir to call on them to fulfil their oath. They stayed there and stewed in their own betrayal for millennia. At which point, we should probably fast forward to the kingdom of Arnor, for that is where Isildur's heirs ended up. Gondor was ruled by his brother's descendants, and an otherwise rather obscure seer called Malbeth, who came out with this prophecy, somewhere around the year 1970 of the Third Age. Over the land there lies a long shadow. Westward, reaching wings of darkness, the tower trembles. To the tomb of kings, doom approaches. The dead awaken, for the hour is come for the oath-breakers. At the stone of Erech they shall stand again, and hear there a horn in the hills ringing. Whose shall the horn be? Who shall call them from the grey twilight, the forgotten people? The heir of him to whom the oath they swore. From the north shall he come, need shall drive him. He shall pass the door to the paths of the dead. This was still more than 1,000 years before the events of the Lord of the Rings, but Elrond remembered it. Aragorn knew the prophecy too, and when Elrond, through his sons, reminded Aragorn of it, he knew what he needed to do. He was the heir of Isildur, and it was his place to call on the dead to finally honour their oath. That, of course, is what happened. Aragorn travelled through the paths of the dead with Legolas and Gimli and Elrond's twin sons. He called on the dead to follow him and led them out of the caverns, up through the hills to the hill of Erech, and to that black spherical stone where they had made their oath to Isildur. We read this. Aragorn dismounted, and standing by the stone he cried in a great voice, "Oathbreakers, why have ye come?" And a voice was heard out of the night that answered him as if from far away, "To fulfil our oath and have peace." Then Aragorn said, "The hour is come at last. Now I go to Pilagir upon Anduin, and ye shall come after me. And when all this land is clean of the servants of Sauron, I will hold the oath fulfilled, and ye shall have peace and depart for ever, for I am Elessar, Isildur's heir of Gondor." And with that he bade Helbarad unfurl the great standard which he had brought, and behold, it was black, and if there was any device upon it, it was hidden in the darkness. Then there was silence, and not a whisper nor a sigh was heard. This was a serious moment undertaken in darkness and fear, and when Aragorn marched on, the dead followed him. The standard was that which Arwen had wrought in secret and sent to Aragorn. It had a black background, but showed the unified standard of Gondor's tree and the 7 stars and crown of Elendil and Arnor. It confirmed Aragorn as the king they could follow. This was the moment Aragorn finally truly embraced his role and destiny as the rightful king, the heir of Isildur and Elendil. The dead men of Dunharrow following him is the evidence, the dead who could only be freed by Isildur's heir. Aragorn did not take them direct to Minas Tirith, though. Instead, he moved along the coast to counter the threat of the Corsairs of Umber, a bunch of sea raiders with a long history linked to the Numenoreans and long in opposition to Gondor. And here, playing a role effectively in support of Sauron's attack on Minas Tirith, they were raiding the south coast of Gondor, causing huge amounts of damage and preventing much of the host of Gondor from actually defending the capital. Aragorn brought the army of the dead to Pelargir, where the focus of the Corsair's attack was happening. He called on the army of the dead to fulfil their oath there, and they did. They charged over the water and across the boats of the Corsairs with fear as their weapon, dread fear. The Corsairs fled, jumping into the sea or running for their lives. The victory there allowed Aragorn to capture the raiding boats and head with the Gondorian army who had been defending there and the Grey Company of Dunedain Rangers to head up the Anduin River to relieve the siege of Minas Tirith. To be clear, the dead men of Dunharrow, or the Oathbreakers as they are sometimes known, were wraiths, ghosts. They could not actually interact with or harm people, but they could scare them nearly to death. That's what happened at Pelargir. They appeared, an army of spectres charging up the Corsairs, and the Corsairs fled. More importantly, the dead men of Dunharrow had finally fulfilled their oath, answering the call of Isildur's heir to defend Gondor and face up to the forces of their former master Sauron. We talk a lot about redemption arcs in fantasy fiction, but this truly is redemption for them. Long, slow and terrible, but redemption. And Aragorn didn't push it. Their fate was in his hands until he held their oath fulfilled, but he didn't tell them that they needed to follow him to Mordor or even Minas Tirith. Yes, in the books, as opposed to the films, Aragorn released them well before the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. For what it's worth, I think this says quite a lot about Aragorn. He wasn't just trying to maximise every advantage he had. He cared about his people, and even those who had sworn themselves to his ancestor. We read this after the confrontation at Pelargir. And Aragorn spoke in a loud voice to the dead men, crying, "Hear now the words of the heir of Isildur. Your oath is fulfilled. Go back and trouble not the valleys ever again. Depart and be at rest." And thereupon the king of the dead stood out before the host and broke his spear and cast it down. Then he bowed low and turned away. And swiftly the whole grey host drew off and vanished like a mist that is driven back by a sudden wind. The dead men of Dunharrow, the Oathbreakers, had finally fulfilled their oath, confirmed by Isildur's heir himself. They had followed the heir of Isildur into battle against Sauron's forces. It had taken thousands of years, but finally the restless souls who had sworn to oppose Sauron and reneged on their promise had found peace by eventually doing what they had sworn to do and rather belatedly opposed evil in their own time. And they had found peace. I'm sure there is a lesson for us all in there somewhere. If you'd like to see more videos on the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of the screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.